We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Quarterback 2015 NFL MVP has agreed to terms with the New England Patriots on a one-year deal for the veteran minimum. Can you believe that? Now, Newton can earn up to $7.5 million more in incentives should he become the starter and hit some of these benchmarks. But now he is the newest member of the New England Patriots. 31 years old this past May, only played two games last season. He suffered a Lisfranc foot injury to his left foot during the preseason, tried to gut it out, only made it two games, and then was shut down for the year. The year before that, while he played the entire season, he suffered a shoulder injury, a right shoulder injury in week 10 against the Steelers. He was having an incredible first half of the season. The Panthers were 6-2. Newton was putting up the best numbers of his career, gets injured in week 10 against the Steelers. His numbers fall off the deck, and the Panthers go on to lose seven of their last eight games. Christian Fourier, two-time Super Bowl champion, set to join us in just a few minutes. But JD, you're driving around, you're hanging out, whatever you're doing yesterday, you see the news that Newton's going to the Patriots. What's it do for you? Does it all of a sudden, because the Patriots are now, they're now third in the AFC in terms of odds. You've got the Chiefs at 5-1, you've got the Ravens at 6-1, and now you've got the Patriots sitting at 10-1. Do you see them as the third best team in the AFC now that Cam Newton's in the fold?
I think they could be. I mean, my initial reaction to it was, wow, that's a perfect fit because it's going to give Cam an opportunity to come in and win a job. And even if he's just average to solid to maybe good, I think that's a 10-win football team. Now, you couple that with a pretty good defense and Bill Belichick, and all of a sudden, maybe you are in the conversation for being, you know, in the top three. I don't think it's a lock. I mean, I think after the top two teams, though, after Kansas City and Baltimore, I mean, the AFC is basically wide open. So why couldn't the Patriots be the third best team? I mean, I think you could name five or six teams that maybe could be the third best team, depending upon how things swing. So, yeah, the initial thought was, wow, this makes perfect sense. I think it's great for Cam. I think it's great for the Patriots to kind of keep things moving, keep things positive in light of losing Tom Brady, and try to still be, you know, maybe not a Super Bowl contender, but a team that's definitely going to be in that mix as a playoff team. Like, I look at the Patriots today, Joe and Dibs, I think the Patriots are a playoff team.
Did you think they were a playoff team prior to that signing?
I thought it was possible, but to me it was more 50-50, you know, because Stidham could just not have it, and then where are you going to go? Well, now it's you can go either way. You can have Cam be the starter, and you might be pretty good. You could have Stidham start, and maybe if he stinks, you go to Cam, and you could still be pretty good or hold it together. I mean, this is going to be a different year, I think, for the Patriots. I mean, typically we're looking at the Patriots as, well, they're going to win 12 games. They're going to win 13 games. Now we're looking at them more as, you know, they're going to try to tread water at worst and, you know, get into the playoffs with 9 or 10 wins. And I think that's well within the realm of possibility.
Dibs, is that how you're seeing it based on the news yesterday?
Yeah, and I was, you know, maybe seeing it a little bit more brightly before because of my undying faith and love for Brian Hoyer, but, you know, it's not it's not something that I could expect JD to understand. I think that this team going in without Cam Newton was kind of an 8 or a 9-win team, and now they're probably a 9 or a 10-win team, but I think that's enough in that division to get it done because Miami's going to be better. And depending on who's going to be the quarterback, we'll see just how good. The Jets should be a little bit better if their quarterback can be healthy. We know Buffalo's going to be right there. I imagine that division's going to be a lot more competitive. No team's going to run away with it with 11 or 12 wins, in my opinion. So the Patriots, 9-7 in the AFC East, might be enough to get it done.
All right, so this is a tweet that's been making the rounds. It's from Richard Sherman, Niners cornerback, yesterday after Newton signed this deal. Quote, how many former league MVPs have had to sign for the minimum? Asking for a friend. Just ridiculous. A transcendent talent and less talented QBs are getting $15 to $16 million a year. Disgusting. What do you think he's getting at here? To me, and I'm not saying this is the case, this feels like a Kaepernick situation, where Sherman's implying that Newton is worth a hell of a lot more, and for some reason outside of his control, I'm not going to say collusion, but the league didn't want to pay him like they want to pay some of these other backups. I'm sure he's alluding to a guy like Nick Foles, right? Foles signs with the Bears. He ends up getting a relatively lucrative deal given what he's done in his career, and that he's coming in as the backup, quote, to start. Sherman here unloading, saying that this is disgusting, the deal Newton took. Do you think that's what he's implying? The fact that, I don't know. Does it involve race? Does it involve collusion? Because the allegation here has to be something. He's implying something here, that it's disgusting he couldn't get more money. Do you see that as what he's implying, Nibs?
Yes, I think he's implying that there's a racial element to it, which is why he used the word disgusting, not, you know, unfortunate or whatever other word. And I don't think that he's necessarily wrong. And in this situation where you've got Cam Newton sitting out there, a guy with his resume, his level of gravitas, as we say on this program, and yet he has to come in and sign a minimum. I'm not sure if it's necessarily collusion or if it's a situation where you look around the NFL and how many teams were really in need of a quarterback, and there aren't that many. You had even a team like the LA Chargers, who is primed for maybe someone to come in and start and help them. They went in a different direction with Tyrod Taylor, and they drafted a quarterback. And so I think, JD, as you look around the league, situation by situation, there wasn't that much demand. And so this is where he ended up landing.
Yeah, I think that's likely the reason. But I also think, you know, I think there's a belief among many that, hey, Cam Newton walking onto the Patriots with Jarrett Stidham sitting as their quarterback, like Cam Newton should be able to go there, and the Patriots should have been trying to sign Cam Newton the moment that Tom Brady was gone. The moment that, you know, that I think there's that thought, whereas the Patriots let it play out and they let it get to the point where the market fell for Cam Newton with the injury and the inability, all the things surrounding the coronavirus and the ability to get the medical, you know, information that you would need. I think there's a lot of folks in the NFL that would say, no, Cam Newton should have been on a team making $10, $15 million a year in March because of his track record as a quarterback.
Let's go to the phones and get another opinion on this. Two-time Super Bowl champion, former Patriots tight end. You can check him out now, 2 to 6 p.m. Eastern on WEEI in Boston. Christian Fourier joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Christian, we always appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Give us the landscape in Boston today after the news surfaced yesterday that Cam Newton is the newest member of the New England Patriots. How does the fan base feel about it?
Well, it's funny. That's the question I've been getting. How does the fan base feel about it? I think they're a little bit indifferent, to be honest with you. I don't think they quite know what they're getting. And they're only going to figure that out when somebody tells them, because for the past 3 months, everyone has been saying how good Stidham is and how great he is, and he should have been a first-round draft pick a year ago, and blah, 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 blah. And here comes Cam Newton, banged up the last 2 years, don't really know what you're going to get, don't really know much about him. So I think they're indifferent, to be honest with you. To me personally, I kind of knew this was going to happen. There's no way they were going into the season with Stidham and Hoyer as their quarterback. No freaking way. And anyone who said anything different was either being fed some bullcorn from the Patriots and was just willing to run with it because they felt like they were part of the process, you know, which was laughable. But I knew something like this was going to happen. I just wasn't sure it was going to be Cam.
Bullcorn, by the way, officially added to the Jolo and Dibs lexicon. I appreciate that, Christian. And you look at the situation then, it would be your understanding or your expectation that Cam Newton's going to come in and he's going to get the starting job, or do you think that it's going to be a quarterback controversy?
You know what? It's interesting. Here's what I think they told him. It's your job to lose. That's what I told him. That's what I think. I haven't talked to anybody, but usually veteran guys, established guys, MVP-type guys, Heisman Trophy-winning-type guys, that have been banged up, that still have a lot to prove and can still play. Cam Newton can still play. He just had a year and a half of bad luck where he's had multiple surgeries. But the guy can still play. And they probably sold him on creating this offense around him, using his talents. Like, I heard the same thing when I came there. But now listen, now they will bench his ass in a hot second if they think, if he starts turning the ball over, if he starts missing passes, wide open guys. They just don't play that, you know. And Stidham has enough, work, you know, and experience with that offense that I think they would feel comfortable putting him in if Cam struggled. Now, that's where the fun really starts. I don't think there's any debate on who the quarterback is going to be. Anyone who comes out there and said, here's a really bold take, here's a really courageous take, like some other people around in this business have done, I think Cam Newton is going to beat out Jared Stidham. But yeah, I mean, he better. If he doesn't, I mean, he sucks. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, yeah, but I still think it's not like he owns it. Once he establishes himself and gets play, has some good games under his belt, I mean, it's going to be tough to pull him out of there.
Christian, that being said, let's say Cam Newton comes in. He's the starter. He's solid. What's the ceiling for the Patriots if he comes in and he's solid?
If he's solid, then they should win the division if he's solid. If he's solid, they should play. They should reach the AFC Championship. That, if he's solid, which means no turnovers, you know, like a good touchdown to interception ratio, because all the other mechanics are there. The coaching, the prep work, the defense, the attention to detail, like not losing games on their own, right? Like, it's like, hell, the Steelers were 8-8 last year. They didn't have anybody. And they were able to navigate to at least become respectable with all the quarterbacks they had. If he's solid, and I would say that's a great ceiling, they're right back in the thick of things if he's solid.
Two-time Super Bowl champ Christian Fourier joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Help me out with this one. Is it just a coincidence that 18 minutes after the announcement that the Patriots had signed Cam Newton, we got an announcement that the Patriots were being penalized for taping the Bengals on the sidelines last December? $1.1 million. They lose a third-round pick. Their video team can't be on the field at all this season. 18-minute difference. Is that just a coincidence?
Yeah, you know what? Isn't that funny? Yeah, I don't believe in coincidences when it comes to the Patriots. I'm just not believing in them. They don't exist. No, I think there's, I mean, not to do the whole conspiracy theory thing, but I do think there's some sort of relationship and agreement. And I don't know if it's a wink-wink. I don't know if it's a whole, you know, pull on your ear type thing. But there is some awareness to what's going on. And, you know, how, and the Patriots, obviously, they'll deny it. You know, hey, we know the season's right around the corner. We've been working on this for months. And, Cam, we finally decided to say it. But, no, I don't believe in coincidences with the Patriots. That's way too close. Way too close.
How much does the timing of the signing of Cam Newton hinder their ability to really go forward with him in week one, saying that it's really kind of late in the process, camp starts in a month? Does he have enough time to get up to speed and be ready enough when camp opens to have that job in week one?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I do believe, like, the same thing Bruce Arians is going to do in Tampa with Brady, and the same thing any good offensive coordinator would do with any talent, like what the Baltimore Ravens did with Lamar Jackson. You change your offense. You cater it to your talent. The days of sticking a square peg in a round hole and then saying this guy sucks are over. Smart coaches adjust to their players. Stupid coaches just keep doing the same thing and then blame the players. So I think the base, the foundation, the play calls, the formations and the motions, all that stuff, that verbiage isn't changing. What is going to change is how Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator for the Patriots, calls the game, how he utilizes Cam Newton. This is like a new toy for these guys. They've never had a player like this of his skill set, of his size, of his ability to run. I don't think they're going to run him a lot. But this, to me, is going to be fun to watch. Now, I don't know Cam. I've never talked to him. He needs to be polished up a little bit as far as his post-game press conferences and just the fact I feel like he tries way too hard to be cool. Like, cool people don't try to be cool. They're just cool. He tries too hard. And then that's gonna come and bite him in the ass up here because I'm already can't stand him. Just outwardly, the way he looks and the way – not the way he looks, but like the vibe he pulls off. Like, I'm the coolest guy and no one can say anything to me, you know, and we'll see how that plays out.
Ultimately for Cam, do you feel like this is a one and done deal with the Patriots or and they go their separate ways regardless, or do you see New England maybe wanting to have him around for years to come if this thing works out?
It all depends on how he plays. I mean, if he plays so great, he'll price himself out of their ability to pay him. So it won't even matter if they want him. They're just not going to pay all that money for a quarterback. You know, it'll be a bargain basement price that they consider the best offer in the world. So it all depends. So, but I would say if I'm Cam Newton, I'm going to use the Patriots just like they're going to use me. I'm going to resurrect my career. I'm going to show what a great leader I am. I'm going to have all these guys talking great about me. I'm going to have Bill Belichick, you know, shining all over about my leadership and my game preparation and my locker room skills, all that stuff. And then I'm going to find a team that's in a desperate situation and is willing to overpay. Like, the thing is that the Patriots are going to have a lot of money next year. They don't have any money this year. They're in cap jail right now. But next year they're going to have a ton of money, probably one of the most amount of money in the NFL. But they just don't overpay people. Hell, they didn't overpay Brady. Like, I can do it to Cam Newton.
Two-time Super Bowl champ, former Patriot tight end Christian Fourier with us here on 95.7 The Game. So, obviously, the Patriots were in search of help at the quarterback position. Was there ever any consideration paid to possibly signing Colin Kaepernick?
I have no idea, but I would say no. And it has nothing to do... Like, if Cam Newton could barely get a job, why would they sign Colin Kaepernick? Why would teams be so quick to sign Colin Kaepernick? If Colin Kaepernick wants a job, Cam Newton is now the comp. He's the comp. Like, Jameis Winston, that's the comp. What he did in New Orleans, what Cam Newton got in New England. If you want to get in the league, you're going to have to suck it up, swallow your pride, commit to proving people wrong, commit to riding the bench until somebody screws up and you get an opportunity to prove that you can play, and you're not going to get paid anything. Like, so there's a risk there, right, of being embarrassed. So I personally don't think the Patriots were ever really serious about signing him. It has nothing to do with his issues off the field. They made a career out of bringing in people who had major issues, tougher situations than him, as far as the spotlight. Tim Tebow is an example. And they handle them fine. So that's not an issue. Their main goal is, can this guy help us win? And I don't think they thought he could.
Antonio Brown's a guy that the Patriots thought could help him win, and he had a short stint in New England. Do you think that he's going to be able to go back and land on his feet and get another opportunity somewhere?
Yeah, I think he will. I think a team like Seattle, one of these teams with good coaches that have a real understanding of how personalities work, have a long history, have a lot of credibility, and players respect them. Harbaugh in Baltimore, Peyton in New Orleans, Carroll in Seattle. Guys like I'd say Shanahan, McVay maybe in Los Angeles, teams like that where. Listen, like, there's no messing around. It's a veteran group. The locker room runs itself. There's a set of protocol in place. And, you know, we'll give you a shot, but if it doesn't work out, like, we're going to move on, and you'll never get a shot again. So there's some risk there. There isn't as much risk for a team like that as opposed to a young coach like Matt Rhule, just use him as an example, who has no NFL experience whatsoever. So a veteran player will walk all over Matt Rhule. We'll take over the team from Matt Rhule. If his personality is strong enough, and Matt Rhule will have nothing to do with it. Well, nothing he can do about it.
It's a great point. Two-time Super Bowl champ, former Patriot tight end. Check him out now, 2 to 6 p.m. Eastern on WEEI in Boston. Christian Fourier with us here on 95.7 The Game. Great stuff as always, Christian. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, boys. See you.
All right, help me out with something here. 8 years ago today, the United States Anti-Doping Agency brought charges against Lance Armstrong. That happened 8 years ago today, Lance Armstrong's ultimate demise. All right? Lance Armstrong was an American hero. Lance Armstrong was considered one of America's great athletes, one of America's great ambassadors. We loved Lance Armstrong. And then it fell apart to the point where people hate Lance Armstrong now. I don't think you'll find anyone willing to take the side that, yeah, Lance is a pretty good guy. Even this documentary that came out recently, he still looks like a... I'm not going to use any of those words, but you know where I'm going, right? He still looks like that. Lance Armstrong disgraced because of the cheating and the lying. Barry Bonds never tests positive, but disgraced from the game of baseball, much like Sammy Sosa, much like Roger Clemens, because of the allegations of cheating, right? And because of the eye test, they get older, they get bigger, all of a sudden they're producing better numbers. Circumstantial evidence is pretty overwhelming in these cases. And yet, once again yesterday, Bill Belichick has been caught cheating. Right? So if you missed it because of the Cam Newton news, Belichick and the Patriots got hit with a penalty for videotaping the sidelines of the Bengals-Browns game last season. There was an advanced scout, a guy who's scouting a team maybe 2-3 weeks in advance. So the Patriots had the Bengals on the roster. An advanced scout and a video team was at this Bengals-Browns game, and they were filming the Bengals sideline. They made up this excuse about how it's for some documentary or whatever. They got popped yesterday, found guilty. It's a $1.1 million fine. They lose their third-round pick in 2021, and the video team can't be anywhere on the field for an entire year. So for those of you scoring at home, the Patriots just got nailed for this. 5 years ago, they got nailed for Deflategate. 2007, they got nailed for Spygate, where they were filming the Jets coaches and their hand signals on the sideline. The team got a $250,000 fine. Belichick got a $500,000 fine for that. They lost the first round pick. That's three guilty convictions. And then on top of that, anybody who played for the Rams back in 2002 in that Super Bowl against the Patriots will tell you flat out that the Patriots were filming their practices in the lead up to the Super Bowl. Lois talked about it before. Marshall Faulk has talked about it before, that the Patriots knew exactly what was coming, that they were filming those practices. Now, they weren't found guilty of this, but Bonds wasn't found guilty either, and neither was Sammy Sosa. And yet, there are strong allegations that would point to this here. So that's four instances. Three where they're found guilty, one where everyone's convinced, but you don't have a guilty conviction. And that's just what we know about with these guys. And yet, people like myself consider Bill Belichick the greatest coach of all time. Whereas Lance Armstrong has been disgraced, Barry Bonds has been disgraced, Sammy Sosa has been disgraced, and on down the list. Why? Why is it that Belichick gets to skirt through years and years of cheating, and the other guys, who weren't even found guilty in a lot of instances, have to take the fall and are seen as pariahs in the eyes of the public, Dibs?
I think it's a couple of things. First, with Bonds, he took down the most hallowed mark maybe in all of sports, and because of that, you had to hate that. And basically, all the circumstantial evidence, the movie, or the book, you read Game of Shadows, it's all pretty clear, all the things that he allegedly, quote-unquote, did. Lance Armstrong, we hate him because he duped us. We didn't care about cycling. He made us love the Tour de France. He became an American hero. And then when it was clear that he was a fraud, and then the arrogance and all that on top of it, we had to hate him. I think with the New England situation, it's just harder to really put your finger on, because if you're not a football diehard, you don't really understand what taping another team's signals would do, or taping their practice, and deflating a football. These aren't things that really strike you from an emotional standpoint, JD, much like the home run record does and the fact that Lance Armstrong duped us.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And look, I think within the football community, Belichick and the Patriots are absolutely hated, like maybe more than anybody in history. I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, other teams, fan bases and the like. But I also think part of it is they're such a big brand, the Patriots, and Boston and that area is such a big brand, and it's needed, I think, for the, you know, the national upkeep, if you will, you know, to interest in the National Football League, and they have such a huge fan base that I think it does get tamped down a little bit, because they've been the gold standard in terms of winning over the course of the last two decades. So I think when you win ultimately and games and championships at a grand scale like that, I think you get absolved by everybody except those that just hate you, which is everybody else.
You also have to figure the fact that it's drugs plays into this as well. Like the idea of sticking a needle into your butt cheek in order to get these superhuman strength. Like people still don't realize anybody can take steroids. You're still not going to get a hit a home run on a consistent basis in the McCovey Cove. Bonds is still one of the greatest of all time, with or without. So you still need that skill, that hand-eye coordination, that swing, that ability to read pitchers and make decisions. But I think people overestimate the steroids, and then they underestimate what Belichick's doing. This is three guilty situations, and then one where all the writing's on the wall. And yet, anytime you ask who's the greatest coach of all time, oh, it's Belichick. What about all the times he's been taping someone? Like you said, Dibs, I don't really understand what that is, so we're just going to let him slide. Like, that is incredible to me that he can have this much on his resume and he can skirt through it. In fact, the last two, this one, he doesn't even take any heat. It's on the video team. He said he knew nothing about it and no one's blaming him. And in Deflategate, Brady took all that heat. You mean to tell me a guy like Belichick, who knows every single thing that's happening with the organization, makes every single decision, had no idea, and he just has all these rogue operators in his locker room? The most buttoned up guy in NFL history, right? Just nothing but rogue operators. Okay. Today's show brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking and no compromises. All right. We've been talking about Cam Newton all morning long. We've been talking about football. Now it's time to pivot. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. On Friday, the NBA dropped its schedule for the 8 remaining regular season games that everyone's going to play prior to the playoffs. It's awesome. It's absolutely incredible. Point spreads are out. We've got a ton to dissect on this. But the big question is whether or not we'll actually get to a point where these guys are playing basketball. So we're going to have that for you next. Chilton Auto Body, open now to serve the Bay Area with contact-free auto body repair options, along with free pickup and delivery. Chilton Auto Body now offers virtual estimates and curbside contact-free service from the comfort of your vehicle. Book an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com.
Now back to Joe Low and Dibs.
So I've got a cheer for Jimmy G, if you guys will indulge me for 10 seconds.
Go ahead.
Go, 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 Garoppolo.
Shut this off. Shut this off right now. I don't like where this is going.
On 95.7, The Game.
Welcome to the Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you, our Monday-bound listening audience, because we love you. And because the Money Spot is brought to you by O'Donnell Financial Group. Survive before you can thrive. Call the O'Donnell Financial Group today and let them help you thrive. It's Joe Low and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game, but with a twist. Low Neal out today, scheduled to be back tomorrow. John Dickinson in his stead. The Chilton Auto Body text line is open for business. 888-957-9570. We've been waiting for sports to come back. We've been hoping and praying for sports to come back. And there have been little benchmarks that have occurred over the last few weeks and months that have given us room for excitement. Perhaps the biggest of which was what dropped on Friday. Now, you can give us dates all you want, but dates have been moving around like crazy. You give us an actual bona fide schedule, and then you throw a bunch of point spreads in there on top of it, people are going to get excited. I got excited. Friday was the best possible day for sports news, in my opinion, since all of this started. The NBA dropped its schedule for the 8 seeding games, as they're being called. 8 remaining regular season games that will be played in the Orlando bubble in an attempt to jockey and finalize the seeding before the playoffs begin. The first game out of the gate is going to be Zion Williamson and the New Orleans Pelicans as a 1-point favorite over the Utah Jazz. That is going to be on Thursday, July 30th. Thursday, July 30th will be the kickoff. We will have 2 games that day, and it's going to be 16 straight days of action to conclude the regular season before we move on to the playoffs. JD is our guest. I'm going to come to you first on this. Let's start here. Friday, while the NBA is releasing the schedule, 9,000 new cases of coronavirus in the state of Florida alone. Florida opened up early, much like Texas, Arizona, Nevada, other states that are seeing a surge in coronavirus cases. So there's concern, obviously. Likelihood that this thing starts on time, and then I want to follow that up with the likelihood that the NBA is able to conclude this plan and declare a champion, in your opinion.
I think it's pretty likely that it gets started, and will at least be attempted to be concluded. And I think you have to go right to the quotes from Adam Silver on Friday, and there were two that stood out. No option is risk-free right now. The challenge before us as a society and as an industry is to find a safe way to operate. He went on to say, we can't sit on the sidelines indefinitely. We must adapt. We believe it will be safer on our campus than off it, but this is not business as usual. And I think, you know, the NBA has already set the tone by beginning the testing well in a month of it in advance to figure out the baseline of where they're at with the 16 out of, what was it, 302 positive tests. The goal is to have little or no positive tests once everybody enters the bubble, and then to keep it that way. And I know guys may choose to come and go. There may be people that aren't getting tested or exposed to the virus outside in Orlando that wind up coming in that could pose problems. But I think once they get everybody there, I actually think they can make it happen. It's just a matter of getting everybody there. And also, and I think that's where the Adam Silver quotes, Joe, and Dibs come in. It's also kind of pushing through the noise a little bit, because I feel like in the next few weeks, there's going to be a lot of pressure from the media. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure from outside sources to call it off. And I think Adam Silver set the tone on Friday that, hey, I'm not going to be as willing to maybe do that as I have been in the last couple of months.
Do you see it being more of a challenge then to get this thing started than it will be to complete it once they're there?
Yes, absolutely.
Very interesting.
Because they're on a schedule where I think it's about 2 weeks from right now, as I look at the calendar, maybe a little over, where they're actually going to be there. To me, the next 2 weeks, as cases surge, there's going to be a lot more debate, I feel, about whether or not it's worth doing at all.
Dibs, how do you see it? Is it going to be tougher to start it than to end it? And do you see them, A, starting it, and then, B, the NBA ultimately declaring a champion and finishing the plan?
Yeah, I see it totally the other way. I think it's going to be more difficult to finish it, because starting it is already basically done, because even though cases are surging, 9,000 new in the state of Florida alone, as Joe pointed out, you've got a schedule, you've got a start date, you're going to be able to get in there and get this thing started. But the challenges that lie ahead, we don't yet know how many players are going to get infected. And we know that this bubble is not going to be safe. They're not going to have all the players and the officials and all the other personnel be there and have nobody contract the virus. That is just, to me, that's an impossibility. So as you get going, and you're going to have players who, JD's right, players are going to decide, I can't do this. I'm out. I'm leaving. And if you have prominent players who come down with COVID-19 or prominent players who decide they're going to leave as this thing continues on through the summer and into the early fall, I think it's more difficult for them to actually get this thing to the finish line than it is for them to even start it.
See, the task before Silver in the NBA is daunting, no doubt. But we compare it to how America's handled this situation, which has been terrible. Let's be completely honest. If you look at it from a New Zealand or South Korea type perspective, there are countries with millions of people who have kind of figured this thing out. They realized what was happening. They put protocol and strategy in place, and they worked to, I'm not going to say eradicate, although in the case of New Zealand, there are no more positive tests. But in the case of South Korea, to limit and get control of the situation so that they're dictating terms rather than having the virus dictate terms to them. So I think to myself, if you really shrink it down from America to just the NBA in a bubble being controlled by a variety of people with a lot of interest and high stakes pressure invested into this thing, that they should be able to pull it off. The difference in the analogy is that in South Korea, you could have a couple positive tests and then you get it under control. One positive test here is massive news. If that one positive test is Giannis or Embiid or LeBron or someone of that nature, because then that topples the whole house of cards. If LeBron gets sick and the Lakers suddenly bow out of this thing, that's the team everyone wants to see. Whether you like him or not, that's the marquee gem. It's not a surprise that it's only going to have a schedule featuring two games that first day, Utah, New Orleans, followed by, wait for it, Lakers, Clippers. We'll go through this schedule in a second. The Lakers don't play any day games. There's a reason for that. They want to take advantage of the TV revenue here. So on one hand, I look at countries like South Korea and New Zealand, and I say if countries could figure it out, I think these guys can figure it out if they follow the rules. But then on the other hand, just one mistake could topple the whole thing. Everyone's already talking about an asterisk. We have to eliminate the idea of putting an asterisk on this. This is a different situation. We just want to watch hoops. I don't care if you win a title and someone wants to say it's an asterisk. If you're able to survive this, kudos to you. You win, and we'll applaud. There's not going to be any hot take debates down the line about whether or not there's an asterisk on this thing. We just want to see hoops at this point.
Right, and if you play best of seven throughout the playoffs, which is the plan, ultimately, even though it'll be at a neutral location, you'll look back and say at least a team, quote, earned it, having won 16 playoff games, which is the NBA standard. You got to win 16 to be crowned the champion. So asterisk or not, Joe, you're right. We do just want to see basketball, and I just think that when you look at how America has botched the COVID-19 response, and then you think about it is from the top down, but it's also so many individuals who are continually out there not wearing masks, even though wearing a mask is a clear-cut way for all of us to limit the spread of this. We still can't even agree on that. So I think about an NBA group and the individuals who are going to go to Orlando, and we're talking about maybe thousands of people inside this NBA bubble. Are we going to be able to have everybody in the bubble obeying the rules and doing the right thing and being able to make it, JD, so that they can get this thing to the finish line? I just don't have that much faith in my fellow Americans.
Yeah, I really do think once they get everybody there, they will be able to control it enough to keep it moving. And the point is well taken. If a star is wiped out, let's say, of a playoff series, and that changes the context of that series, and you lose somebody that you thought was going to be in the finals early, that can pose a problem. To me, the only thing that shuts it down, and this is very legitimate, the only thing that shuts it down and is a serious case. Like one serious, like we talk about, okay, 16 test positive and the majority of players are asymptomatic when they test positive. If it's a number of asymptomatic players to where they can keep that number relatively low, I think they'll be able to push forward regardless of who winds up getting it. But here's the thing. If one player has to go into the hospital or one player has more severe symptoms, the whole thing's a wrap. It's over right there on the spot. If player X on any team it has a severe case to where everybody else takes note and says, wait a minute, I could get that. I could go into the hospital. Then I think the whole thing's arrived. I still think there's a belief, and I think it comes from the doctors that the league has entrusted in talking to the players and the negotiating and about concerns, to where there's enough players that and the majority of players that believe if they get it, they're going to be okay. If that stops being the case, then it's over.
So you think it's more likely that if there's a really bad case derailing basically anybody, because that's going to be a wake-up call when it hits that close to home, do you think that's more the players going, we're done with this, or it's the league coming in saying, we're shutting this thing down?
I think it'll be both at that point. I mean, I think it'll be similar to the response of March 11th when Rudy Gobert tested positive and it was, wait a minute, we have at least one case in the league right now. It's all got to go. I think if one person is hit severely enough to where they have to be hospitalized, that will be the thing that ends it. I know there's been a lot of discussion about, well, how many cases? And there's been a lot of hand-wringing about, you have to tell everybody how many cases, how many positive tests end it before it starts, because we have to know that number. I don't think it's that, it can be a fluid situation as long as we're talking about relatively symptom-free spread and the number stays relatively low. But the moment somebody gets a bad case of it, and that's not impossible, I think that's when the whole thing would end.
And think about who is at the most vulnerable spot, JD, and it's the coaches. And you think about the coaches like, Greg Popovich, older guys, Mike D'Antoni, etc. A coach was to get it and get seriously ill, that might be the kind of thing that would be a tipping point as well. And not to single out the older coaches, it could be a younger coach as well. But I think if you look at that situation, or even if it's an official who gets badly ill from the COVID-19, that would send shockwaves throughout the bubble. And I also think the other one that could topple it is if you get multiple players from a team. Let's say a team that is going to be the sixth seed, and you're getting ready to finish up these eight games, and the seeding's almost done, and now you have one of your playoff teams that is without three of its top eight players. How are they going to legitimately go forward? And then what, you have a team have a bye? I think something like that, if you had multiple cases on one team, that also could topple it from the inside.
No doubt. You could take an entire team out of the playoffs. If one guy on a team gets it, there's a good chance that a high percentage of teammates are going to get it as well. You're passing the same ball around. You're right. Going to meals together. You're probably high-fiving and having interactions with each other that you don't even know about. Like this idea in baseball, no spitting, no doing any of this. It's a good rule, but it's not exactly that practical. You can't just convince people not to spit. It's a habit. It just becomes a habit. It's like trying to tell baseball players, stop stepping out of the box after every pitch. They can't stop. They can't do it. It's all habit. All of that is routine. If they break the routine, they're not going to be comfortable in there. Anyone who's ever played golf knows you have your pre-shot routine. You line yourself up. You got to get your balance. You might waggle the club, whatever it may be. But if you're off that routine, you're automatically going to lose confidence in your upcoming swing. JD, you started this conversation talking about Adam Silver. The quotes from Silver on Friday, all the way across the board, were more aggressive and more assertive than we have seen at any point during this. You hit one. Here are two I'm going to read you back to back. Quote, we know that COVID-19 will be with us for the foreseeable future, and we are left with no choice but to learn to live with this virus. No options are risk-free right now. Quote number two, my ultimate conclusion is that we can't outrun this virus and that this is what we're going to be living with for the foreseeable future, which is why we designed the campus the way we did. And so it's a closed network. And while it's not impermeable, we are in essence protected from cases around us. At least that's the model. So for those reasons, we're still comfortable being in Orlando. That's Adam Silver on Friday. I think it was a day or two after PGA Tour Commissioner, I think his name's Jay Monahan, yep, went up to the Travelers and basically said, look, the show goes on. This is where we're at these days. The show goes on. We have to learn to live with this thing. We can't shut everything down every time we have an issue. Sports, it's like full steam ahead right now, whereas the rest of the country is trying to get people to throttle back, wear the mask, distance, start to pay more attention to what you're doing than you have been. Sports is basically saying, we're going to find a way, and we're going to make it happen. The show must go on, Divs.
In a sense, it feels like sports is saying what the country is kind of wakening up to, which is the virus wins. You win, virus. We can't take the measures necessary to defeat the virus because we are all so selfish and we don't have enough deep respect for each other. I was watching Frontline late last week or over the weekend, good show on PBS, JD, and they were talking about the global response to COVID-19, country by country. And they talked about Japan, where if you're sick, you wear a mask. Forget COVID-19, you wear a mask. And it's not only to protect yourself, but it's to protect those people around you. And it's all about respect in the Japanese culture. And it really struck me because here in America, not only do we not respect each other, but we hate each other. We can't get beyond our hatred to even get to a point where we respect each other. You go outside anywhere, you see all these videos on social media of the guy trying to get in the Walmart without a mask. And then there's the lady screaming at the person because they're insisting she have her mask on. And so she cusses out the barista or whatever. We can't even get to a point where we can wear our masks. So what sports is telling me is that they're saying, you know what, we give up. We could not have a season and we could come back in 6 months and we're still going to be fighting this virus because we as people in America won't take even the simplest of measures to wear a mask to maybe get an upper hand on this virus. So sports, collectively, they're throwing up their hands saying, virus, you win. We got to go out and do what we do.
But go ahead, Joe.
They're collectively
also, I think, just by nature of the calendar, saying this is they waited as long as they possibly could. I mean, the NBA waited as long as they possibly could. The intent was always to come back. I think the NBA would have you believe that they were closer to shutting the whole thing down than they really were. I think some of that is, you know, public relations, frankly. The NBA, though, now finds itself where they reached the last possible day that they can attempt to do this. And I think that's why Adam Silver's tone has shifted, even though cases are up, in particular in the area in which they're going to have their campus environment. So I think the timeline on this sports was always going to attempt to find a way to come back. The NFL was always going to try to be ready to go on September 10th and September 13th, whether it's fans or not. Like, that was a given from March 12th. Like, anybody that knows anything about sports knew that was going to happen. The NBA's figured out a way to do it and try to push through. Major League Baseball, because of the money, they waited to the latest possible time. And so it's going to be interesting, though, to see how those leagues deal with the noise, because the noise is coming, and with good reason. I mean, you know, the debate about whether it should be done, I think it's a fair debate to have, but I think it's going to be interesting because a lot of these leagues were able to play PR for one reason or another and say, well, we're not coming back. We're concerned, but we're not coming back, when the reality was they were spending every waking hour figuring out a way to attempt to come back.
No doubt. And imagine being one of these leagues. Imagine being the NBA, for example, right? Like, you have your drop dead date in terms of, if we can't get something going by this point, we're done. So you sit back and you say, look, maybe we could try something sooner, but let's see what the country does. Let's leave it up to our leadership. Let's see if we can find a way to get this thing under control, and then maybe the decision will be made for us. Maybe it'll be under control, everything will be good, and then when we come back, it won't really be that intense. And then you just watch the country burning down around you in all regards. And you think to yourself, why am I waiting on these slaps? These guys aren't going to get anything done. This is only going to get worse. If we just wait for the country to get organized, we're never playing basketball ever again. Two situations this weekend, and if you're on the internet at any point, you saw them. Number one, the Karen down in L.A. at, what was it, Trader Joe's or Whole Foods that opened up? She goes in, she's just yelling and screaming at everyone. They come up and they're like, look, you got to wear a mask. That's the rule. My doctor said I have a breathing condition and I don't have to wear a mask, and it's against federal law to make me wear a mask. And it's like, first of all, why are we continuing to yell at lowly paid store workers? These people are not setting the rules. These people are risking a lot just to be in there to stock food on the shelves for you. Do you remember at the beginning when no one could get toilet paper and there's an outrage in the great state, the great country of America? Outrage, we couldn't get toilet paper. Lines down the street to get in the grocery stores. Now you can go in and just put this thing over your face. That's it. Put it over your face. Protect the other people around you. It's against federal law to make me do it. What? This Karen, she's yelling at everybody. She's screaming and yelling at everybody. And it's like, good.
Throwing groceries out of her cart.
Yes, chucking groceries, yelling at everyone. Everyone's filming her. It's like, what have we become? These store workers, they are not implementing the laws. Why are you screaming at them? Why are you screaming at everyone? And then the slob on the airplane. I'm sure everyone saw the picture. He's sitting in the aisle seat. So someone across the aisle takes this picture of him. Guy's just a complete slob, wearing a certain red hat, which doesn't have to have anything to do with this, but they hand out masks for people on the plane. There's, you can see in the row behind him, there's kids, there's little kids wearing masks. This guy takes his mask and uses it as an eye cover to black out the light. And he uses the mask for his mouth to cover his eye so he can go to sleep. And he's sitting there sleeping. Those are the two instances this weekend. So if you're Adam Silver, you're looking at that thinking, we're never going to play again if we wait for people to wake up. We are never going to play any sports in this country ever again if we put it on the people to get this done. We have to take control. We're going to go ahead and do it. And if it doesn't work, well, we're going to give it the best possible chance to keep people safe. But good grief, you look around every day, it's something new. Everyone yelling and screaming. There's a protest in St. Louis over the weekend. You see the guy who just comes out with the assault rifle to protect his house? Like, every single turn, his wife's holding the handgun. They're pointing it at people as they walk by. You know what? If you're the NBA, go ahead, NBA. Go ahead. I trust you to have a better plan than literally anybody else who is handing me a plan every single day. I trust the NFL to figure out, you know why? Greed. They all want to get paid. They're going to figure out a plan. They're going to figure it out. So I'm just going to leave it up to these guys, because if we leave it up to us, what are we going to do? You go outside, there's no mask. You go outside, everyone's fighting. Yeah. What else is there?
There's just such a level of exasperation, Joe. You're right. I mean, you laid that out perfectly, where you look at the cases yesterday, and I'm going to tweet out this this graphic that shows the United States in comparison to the European Union, which is a great way to compare it, because population-wise, very similar. European Union slightly larger than the United States. They had a total in the European Union of 3,800 new cases yesterday. We had 38,000. 38,000 new cases. So the level of exasperation I think that everyone's feeling, because people aren't wearing masks, people aren't social distancing, you're acting the fool in grocery stores, etc. So from a league standpoint, they're looking at what's going on in America, and the curve was flat for a little bit, but now it's surging back up. So if you're a league, are you going to wait for Americans to do what's right and really control this? Or are you going to go out there and try to save your sport? Because you're losing millions and millions of dollars, and your fans aren't doing anything to help us contain this, so you might as well play ball.
The absolute best line I heard to describe all of this, and I don't know who to credit it to, so I haven't. I apologize for that. But it surfaced over the weekend, and it was just simple as this. The world is watching America the way America watched Tiger King. That's where we're at right now. And I heard that. I'm like, man, that is accurate and also very sad. The world is watching America the way America was watching Tiger King. We had no problems laughing and wondering, how could you be so ridiculous? Look at these people in Oklahoma. Let's point the finger and judge them as we just go ahead and do the same thing on a global scale. If you're anywhere in the world watching this right now, everything that's taking place, you got to think to yourself, damn, what are these people doing? Don't they ever calm down? Why are they fighting in grocery stores at every single turn? That's what we do. Since the start of this thing, grocery stores have become the MGM Grand on Saturday night during Cinco de Mayo weekend.
Fights everywhere. Fights yes. In the ring, fights out of the ring.
Like, I'm showing up to stock your shelves and hopefully provide you with the food and supplies you need. And I'm taking a risk. And if I'm doing it here in San Francisco, I'm severely underpaid and I can't afford anything. And I got to deal with your lip. I got to deal with you, A, not wanting to wear the mask, and B, yelling and screaming if we tell you to put it on. It's not my rule, Karen. It's not my rule. I mean, these people, the guy in Florida who is fighting the guy, the woman at the store, it's like, why do you want to go out and get in the fights? You should actively be looking to not get in the fights. That should be the whole point of your life, to not get into a fight. If you can go your whole life without getting into a fight, that's a pretty good job by you. Good life right there. Man, sorry, JD. I know you're about to jump in there, but
no,
the Karens, they're everywhere.
No, they are everywhere. And I want to, I'll bring it back to sports in this sense, and I'll pose the question to you guys. I mean, all of these leagues are trying to come back right now. What happens if they don't? And I just mean in terms of, because right now, you know, the set of the population, and we can all agree that sports are non-essential considering where we are as a country. Like, we can all agree on that. Yet we're all desperately looking forward to these leagues being able to figure out a way to come back and make it work and be safe. What happens as a country if, as things skyrocket, the NBA pulls out and Major League Baseball can't get it done? And the NFL, even at some point down the line, says, we've got to alter the schedule or can't start on time or have to, or too many players get sick once everybody reports to training camp. I mean, what's that going to look like when 30 teams have 90 players show up and 20 of them, maybe, you know, I'm just picking a number, 20 or 25 of them test positive in some instances? Like, the those conversations are coming. But my question to you guys is, as frustrated, exasperated as we are as a country, what's going to happen when that portion of the population that's counting on sports for some of their sanity doesn't get it? That's what I worry about.
Exasperation then transitions into desperation. And you're already seeing that in some quarters, people who, you know, are just dying to go out and get their hair cut, or people who are antsy to get out to bars again. When the announcement that London Breed, the San Francisco mayor, made how they're not going to go into the next phase and they're going to kind of stick and stay with where we are, that was met by a certain level of desperation in the reaction. So from the sports sphere, JD, if it comes out, if the NBA's bubble gets burst and then baseball never gets going and then we get to September, that would be the big one. If you got to September and there was no NFL, if things got so bad where the virus gets even way more out of control and the NFL says, you know what, we can't have a season. I think at that point you would see a reaction that we've never seen before in this country as it pertains to not having sports.
Eat your vegetables and you can have your dessert. Wear your masks and you can have your sports. That's how we should look at this. If anyone saw that video a week or two ago that surfaced out of New Zealand when they had that packed house for that rugby game. It was the first rugby game back. It was a completely packed house. People were tweeting, this is the reward. This is your reward, New Zealand. You get to go out and pack the house to watch this event because you did what you were supposed to do. You followed the rules. You followed the guidelines. You eradicated the virus. New Zealand's completely clear of it. And now they can go back to resuming their life. Everyone yelling and screaming, no outside lands this year. No Coachella this year. That's the prize. That's the dessert if you eat your vegetables. Nobody wants to eat their vegetables. Karen just wants to eat her dessert. She needs to eat her vegetables. I don't want to eat them. My kids don't want to eat them. You guys don't want to eat them. But that's how you get to the dessert. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to your 8 o'clock hour of Jolo and Dibs here on 95.7.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.